22 tout le monde présente
relecture.
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 Relecture en réécoute. Antenne Kiasma.
Yes, I do. I love you. Asadadu an la ila ila ala. Asadadu an la ila ila ala. Asadadu ana Mohammedan Rasu Allah. Asadadu ana Mohammedan Rasu Allah. I bear witness that there is no God.
What is about to transpire in a few moments is wrong.
Is the messenger.
However, we as human beings do make mistakes and errors. This execution is one of those wrongs, yet doesn't mean our whole system of justice is wrong. Therefore, I would forgive all who have taken part in any way in my death. Also, to anyone I have offended in any way during my 39 years, I pray and ask your forgiveness, just as I forgive anyone who offended me in any way. And I pray and ask God's forgiveness for all of us, respectively, as human beings.
Statement of facts. Prosecution case. On October 16, 1998, a woman called 911. According to the dispatcher, the caller was crying, screaming, pleading for her life. The woman said she'd been tied up and raped and had struggled to the phone, dialing with her tongue. The caller was afraid her assailant would return. She did not say she'd been smoking crack or losing consciousness. Units were subsequently dispatched to the location. Reporter's transcript 2, 1208 to 1215. One of the Compton patrol officers who responded to the radio call heard a woman crying inside the home. She unlocked the door with her feet and the police entered the house. The woman was laying on the living room floor wearing only a white blouse, her knees and ankles bound with tightly knotted bed sheets. Her elbows and wrists were bound behind her back. Her mouth was gagged with a piece of bed sheet and bound with duct tape wrapped around the back of her head. She was crying. Reporter's transcript 2, 1217 to 1224, 2, 1227 to 1231. The officer untied the woman, cutting the duct tape out of her hair. Reporter's transcript 2, 1225. There were cut-up bed sheets and a pair of scissors on the floor next to the woman. Police recovered crack cocaine pipes, a hypodermic needle, an empty Ziploc baggie with cocaine residue, and an unwrapped condom from a bedroom next to the living room. The condom was on top of the bed. The other items were on top of the dresser. Reporter's transcript 2, 1233 to 1237. 2-12-44 to 12-45, 2-12-47, 2-12-49. The preliminary hearing testimony of Virginia was read. Virginia testified that 11:30 p.m. on October 15, 1998, she was at home when her manager came in and told her there was some business outside. Virginia provides sex for money. She went outside and the manager indicated a red Nissan. Appellant was driving. Virginia got in the car and they drove to Appellant's house, agreeing on a price of $50, half the money before, half after. There was no mention of bondage sex. Reporter's transcript 2, 1270 to 1274, 2, 1281 to 1283. Once inside, they went into Appellant's bedroom. He gave her $25, and they sat for a while watching TV, doing cocaine, and drinking small bottles of wine. Appellant orally copulated Virginia, then told her he had to leave and get some crack. She waited for him, drinking and dozing off. When she awoke, Appellant was squatting over her. She was bound, her hands taped together in front of her, her legs spread apart and taped to the bottom bedboard. She was wearing her bra, but her pants and panties had been removed. She had not agreed to be tied up. Virginia asked Appellant what he was doing. He said, "You're fixing to get raped." Virginia dozed off twice before Appellant left. He asked her if she was tired. She told him she was sick. Reporter's transcript 2, 1274 to 1276, 2, 1284 to 1288. Appellant taped Virginia's mouth. He would get up periodically, seemingly nervous, taking hits of cocaine. He digitally penetrated her three times and felt her. He removed the tape so that Virginia could orally copulate him. He orally copulated her. He was very rough, pulling her hair. At one point, Virginia said that he didn't have to do this, that all he had to do was ask her, even if he didn't have money to pay. Appellant said he didn't care. He told her to ask Keisha. She's done it before. Reporter's transcript 2-1277 to 1282, 1289 to 1292, 1295 to 1298. After he was finished, appellant left, telling Virginia not to try to get away. She got one hand free and rolled and scooted to the phone, dialing 911 with her tongue. Virginia had never met appellant before that night. She didn't notice anything unusual about appellant's penis or scrotum. Reporter's transcript 2-1280 to 1284, 2-1291 to 1295, 2-1298. Virginia was starting to withdraw from heroin that night and was nodding, dozing on and off throughout the incident. She had 3 12-ounce bottles of Cisco before falling asleep. Reporter's transcript 2-1285 to 2-1287 to 1288. It was stipulated that Virginia testified at appellant's preliminary hearing on February 8, 1999, sometime after 1:30 p.m., Virginia was pronounced dead on February 9, 1999, at 6:45 a.m. Reporter's transcript 2-1299 to 1300-1500. Evidence Code Section 1108, W and S. On May 12, 1995, W lived a block away from appellant in Nickerson Gardens. She was then freebasing cocaine. That night, W was at home with her children when appellant came by to get his cocaine pipe. Appellant asked W if she wanted to go to his house to get high. She said she did and later walked to appellant's house. Reporter's transcript 3-1502 to 1505. Once inside, W went into a bathroom. The lights went off. When they came back on, appellant had a knife at W's throat. He told her to undress. She refused. After some back and forth, appellant threatened to do it to W's 13-year-old daughter, S. W agreed to undress, and appellant threw her into her mattress into a bedroom. He tied W's hands behind her back, tied her legs and ankles, and gagged and taped her mouth. Appellant orally copulated W, had her orally copulate him, then vaginally penetrated her. He asked W how she would like him to do that to her daughter. She said to leave her daughter alone. Reporter's transcript 3-1504 to 1508, 3-1512. Appellant told W to call S and tell her to bring W some money. He said he would kill her if she didn't get S to come. When S arrived at about 11 p.m., appellant pulled her inside. W heard S screaming, "Mommy, Mommy." Appellant put a knife to S's throat and told her to undress. He threw S naked onto the mattress next to W, who was still bound. W watched appellant rape her daughter. Appellant next took W and S into another room, saying he would kill them if they didn't cooperate. He went back and forth between W and S the rest of the night. He also vaginally penetrated W in front of S. As he touched S, S turned her back. At some point, appellant put a vibrator in S's vagina. He had her orally copulate him. S had never had sex before that night and told appellant that it hurt. Reporter's transcript 3-1509 to 1511, 3-1515 to 1519. Defense case. Dr. George Dubin is a surgeon, psychiatrist, who has treated drug, alcohol addicts. He reviewed Virginia's autopsy report, which indicated that the cause of death was a multiple drug overdose in interaction with methamphetamines, cocaine, heroin, and morphine. Given Virginia was pronounced dead at 6:45 a.m. on February 9, 1999, her death came within 15 to 16 hours after her preliminary hearing testimony. According to Dubin, Virginia was a chronic drug user, specifically of heroin. The heroin metabolite stays in the system for about 7 hours. If someone was nodding off, that would indicate they were under the influence. Someone under the influence can answer questions in a responsive manner. If someone is in a blackout, they could do things they would not recall once sober. They might agree to something and not recall the agreement once sober. Drug combinations can exacerbate blackouts. Reporter's transcript 3-1540 to 1546, 3-1548, 3-1553 to 1554. If someone ingested 3 bottles of 18% malt liquor and was using cocaine and heroin during a short period of time and said they had a blackout, that would seem honest. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1546 to 1547. Appellant testified they had committed the offense against W. and her daughter and felt terrible about it. He pleaded no contest to a 20-year sentence because he knew he was guilty. He did not plead guilty in the present case because he is not guilty. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1803, 3, 1823 to 1824, 3, 1839 to 1840. The first time appellant saw Virginia was outside a Mexican market when she wiped his windows for money. The next time she was babysitting for a friend. A week or so later, appellant told his friend that he wanted to see Virginia. They went to Keisha's apartment. When appellant went to pick up Virginia, he saw her talking to John Smith, who used to date and beat appellant's ex, Bonita. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1803 to 1806. Appellant and Virginia agreed on a fee for $25 for bondage sex. In 1998, one could get a prostitute in Compton for a $5 hit of rock cocaine. The extra money offered there was because appellant wanted something special. They stopped en route at a market, and appellant brought Virginia a large bottle of Peach Cisco and a pack of Salems. Once at appellant's house, they smoked some cocaine. Virginia drank the Cisco, then got sick, kept passing out. Appellant asked if she was okay. She said she needed her heroin outfit. Appellant took her back to her van. She got her needle and drugs and returned to appellant's house where she injected herself. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1806 to 1809, 3, 1816, 3, 1819 to 1821, 3, 1827 to 1828, 3, 1832 to 1835, 3, 1838 to 1839. At some point, appellant left to find more heroin for Virginia because she kept nodding off. As he was driving back, he saw police cars parked at the corner. He weaved through them because he was on parole and had drugs on him. He rolled through a stop, turned, and the police shot at him, and he took off. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1811 to 1814, 3, 1828 to 1833, 1833 to 1838. Appellant did not orally copulate Virginia. She did not orally copulate him. Appellant was frightened of HIV. They ended up not doing anything because Virginia kept getting sick and needing more drugs. At the time, appellant shaved his pubic area. He had been stabbed once by his wife and was visibly scarred. His scrotum is exceptionally large. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1809 to 1811, 3, 1815 to 1817, 3, 1822, 3, 1827. Appellant did not threaten to rape Virginia. There was no need, as he had already paid her for sex. He never hit her. He couldn't have sat on top of her as she orally copulated him because he had a waterbed and weighed about 200 pounds at the time. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1811 to 1812, 3, 1841 to 1842. If appellant referred to W as a bitch, it was not personal. To appellant, every woman is a bitch. Reporter's Transcript 3, 1825 to 1826. John C., counts 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 21. John C. was 17 years old at the time of trial. For the past 6 years, she's told police she was 5 years older because she is a prostitute and didn't want them to know she was a minor. At trial, John C. testified she did not remember or did not want to answer a number of questions. When John C. was asked to testify at appellant's preliminary hearing, she lay on the floor and refused to leave because she had nothing to say. After police put restraints and shackles on John C., she screamed and kicked, saying she didn't want to go. Reporter's Transcript 4, 686 to 687. John C. did testify that she told Detective Haight that in November 1998, when John C. was 11, she met appellant at a Greyhound bus station in San Bernardino, and he took her to Los Angeles. She testified she did not tell appellant she was 11 at the time and said she did not remember whether she told the detective she told appellant her age or if the appellant told her that she was pretty and he would take her on a date or if he gave her his telephone number or if she agreed to date appellant. John C. testified she never told appellant her age. Reporter's Transcript 4, 684 to 690, 4, 693, 4, 708 to 709. Jhansi did not remember telling the detective she called appellant and met him in an auto body shop, that he showed her photographs of girls in short shorts and stilettos, or whether he asked her if she wanted to look like the girls in the photos. She did not remember telling the detective that appellant said she would look like those girls if she stayed with him, that he would buy her pretty clothes, or that she told her appellant her parents didn't care about her, so she should go with him. Jhansi testified she went with appellant of her own free will, and he did not force her to do anything. Reporter's transcript 4690-692, 4694, 4709-710. Jhansi did not remember if she went to a motel with appellant, or whether appellant told her he was a pimp and the women in the pictures were his whores. Jhansi testified she didn't know appellant as a pimp. She did not remember appellant asking if she would whore for him, or promising her pretty clothes, or saying her parents didn't care for him, or letting her call them, and when there was no answer, saying that if they were worried, they would have been there, or that she agreed to work for him. She did not remember telling the detective appellant said never take less than $50 for head, explained head meant oral sex, or that a customer should touch her breast, or she should fondle the customer's penis to make sure the person was not a police officer, or that if she was going to a hotel with a customer, she should first call appellant or bring the money to appellant right after sex, or that if she did all this, she would be rewarded with pretty clothes and appellant would care for her. Reporter's transcript 4692-695. Jhansi testified she did not remember telling the detective appellant then took her shopping for new clothes and had her hair and nails done, or that later two black men arrived. Appellant told Jhansi to just do what they say, and one of the men took out his penis and said, just do it, suck my dick. She did not recall saying that she left that night to try to get away, but appellant found her and brought her back to the motel, where she and appellant took showers, and appellant asked if Jhansi had ever had sex, and she said no, and that she didn't know anything about sex. Reporter's transcript 4695-697. Jhansi did not remember telling the detective appellant laid on the bed, took out a condom, explained to Jhansi how to put it on his erect penis, and repeatedly demanded Jhansi orally copulate him until she complied. Then a short time later told Jhansi to lay face up and put his penis in her vagina, or that she demanded he stop because she was in pain, but that he did not stop until he decided to do so. She did not remember telling the detective that the next morning appellant introduced her to his other prostitutes, or that in the evening appellant took her to a house party in South Los Angeles. Reporter's transcript 4697-699. Jhansi did not recall telling the detective that at the party another of appellant's prostitutes, a woman named Cinnamon, told Jhansi to stay with her, that she would show Jhansi how it's done. Or that Cinnamon was approached by a man at the party. She told Jhansi to follow them into the backyard, where Cinnamon orally copulated the man who paid, was then told Jhansi that's how it's done. Later at the party, another man approached Jhansi. They had sex. Jhansi felt bad afterwards, but felt better after being paid. Jhansi did not recall telling the detective she told Cinnamon she got paid. Cinnamon told her to give the money to Macbone. She told Cinnamon she wasn't going to. Cinnamon told appellant Jhansi was refusing to pay him. Jhansi took the money from Jhansi's bra. Jhansi told appellant it was her money. She earned it, and appellant said, bitch, it's my money. All your money is my money. She did not remember telling the detective appellant slapped her repeatedly, or that she dropped to the floor so as not to get hurt, or that appellant slapped and choked her and said not to get him mad, did she want him to go to jail, or that they returned to the motel, or that the next day appellant asked Jhansi if she was mad because he'd hit her, and to try to stop her from being angry, took her to Disneyland. She did not recall telling the detective that a few days later, appellant drove her to Figueroa to start street walking, telling her to touch customers in the groin to make sure they weren't law enforcement, and if they refused to be touched, to get out of the car, or to look at the license plate to see if it was an undercover police car, or never to get into a car with a black man or girls because they would try to recruit her to work for another pimp, or never to make eye contact with a police officer, she could then be stopped, or saying that for the rest of the day she performed various acts of prostitution and gave all the money to appellant, or that she worked 7 days a week, sometimes earning up to $1,500 a day, or that appellant took her and other prostitutes to Arizona, Washington, D.C., New York, Nevada, and Florida to work, taking her to Pico and Alvarado beforehand to get a false identification card for flying. Reporter's transcript 4702-704. Jhansi did not tell police she was working for appellant when she was arrested on February 26, 2002, June 6, 2002, April 19, 2003, October 9, 2003, April 10, 2004, or June 18, 2004. Jhansi has been arrested a lot for prostitution. Jhansi testified she'd been a prostitute since she was 11, has worked everywhere, never worked for a pimp, did not give money to appellant, lived everywhere, and has stayed in group homes since she was 13. She always runs away from the group homes to go back to work. Jhansi pays her own way and likes her life. Reporter's transcript 4, 720 to 721, 4, 729 to 735. Yes, I understand, I understand. Mm-hmm. In my house? Oh, okay, yes. So it doesn't what? I understand, I understand. Yes, of course, of course. No, what happens, what happens? What happens is that, yes, maybe the one, yes, with my daughter, it's that I used to drink a lot. I used to drink very heavily, and if I made a mistake with my daughter, well, but with my granddaughter, I never, not that, not with my granddaughter. I don't know. I don't know why my granddaughter is saying that. No, he has no reason. He has no reason. He has my word. Lolly. Well, what happens is, from what I remember, well, about that time, because I was watching television, drinking, and the girl came and sat next to me, and I touched her, but I didn't force her or anything like that. No. I mean, well, I didn't rape her. Only contact. Excuse me? Yes. Who? Me? I don't remember if between seven, eight years old, excuse me? I don't remember. No, but it was only on top like this, not like this, yes. But I mean, she had her tiny panties on, yes. What happens is I was watching TV and she came and sat, and that I remember the legs and that, but I never touched her private parts. Nothing, I masturbated there next to her. How did I feel? With my hand. No, well, her back was to me, yes. But her back was to me. I mean, she was watching TV, yes. What was I feeling? Well, what a manual masturbation is, right? And grabbing the girl, yes. But the here, I mean, not grabbing her parts. Well, to masturbate, yes. Hers? On the penis, yes, yes. No, well, I let her go by then, afterwards. But the truth is, I don't remember very well. So it's been 18 years already, and I was drunk. But that's what I remember. Yes. No, although I don't know. No, I don't think so. But I don't remember this. No, if I was driving, how could I touch her? Well, in fact, I have to do it, ask for her forgiveness. No, in fact, I have been thinking about that, and yes, I have to apologize, and yes, it is. The truth is, I don't remember, but yes, yes, I don't remember that time, but yes, yes, it was. Perhaps it wasn't intentional, because to be driving, listen, and to turn like this, the truth is, no. But I don't believe it either, but other things are coming out that truly don't. The truth is, I don't remember. No, no, look, I don't remember. I don't remember, and this is also helping me as a relief, because I feel a little more unburdened from the weight I'm carrying, but the truth is, I don't remember this. Well, it was that day on the sofa, yes, that I masturbated. Yes, that's true. I don't remember such an occasion taking place. Why don't you bring Lolly? Why don't you bring Lolly? Look, the truth is, I don't remember anymore. Not anymore. To me, it doesn't. No, it's not that. It's not that I don't want to talk. It's that I don't remember. The truth is, I don't. Yes. No. Mm-hmm. That I did what to her? But it was the time that perhaps I didn't make myself clear, but that was the time that I'm saying I masturbated. Then it is no, it's been 18 years. I don't remember if I was lying down or sitting down next to her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? I don't understand that very well. I didn't hear you. Neither do I. It's okay. Uh-huh. But I don't remember that. Okay, about it not happening. It won't. But if she's saying that, I have no other option than to admit it. So what can I do? If I say something different, you're going to be hard on her. The truth is, I don't remember that. No, that's why I say, yes, of course. Of course I feel bad. Yes, I mean, I didn't penetrate her. It's what I'm talking about, which is what it is what I'm understanding. What do you mean? So the test could have been done, that there was penetration, that there was tearing. I don't know. Perhaps it was a moment of weakness since I was so drunk. I don't. want to. I don't want to blame it on being drunk because even a drunk knows better than to shoot himself in the foot. But I don't use it as an excuse. The truth is, as I'm saying, I remember that, but I don't think I would have penetrated her. It was on top. No, the truth is I don't know, but I remember I did not penetrate her, just like this on top, but from the back, in between the little legs. Well, yes, in the middle part, like here with the penis. Excuse me? I don't remember anything about that. Excuse me? I don't remember if she had or not. No, I don't remember. No, who didn't have me? I don't remember. Excuse me? Yes, no, I don't remember. That's the truth. No, it's that I don't remember that time. I with her? No. Well, no, I don't know. It just happened, like I'm telling you. Well, she laid down there with me and, excuse me? Yes, well, it was a child, right? I say again, perhaps a moment of weakness, a moment of weakness. Nothing. After I started to touch her. No, she had her back to me, the tummy, the little legs, but I never touched her vagina, and she says not. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I no longer remember that time. No, me forcing her, no. And no, well, I try to do this as honestly as I can, but no, there are many things that are surfacing right now that I don't know. Well, yes, it is as I'm telling you, like I said before. I don't want to use the alcohol as a pretext, but there are many things I don't remember, right? No, well, like I'm telling you, he's bringing up many things I don't remember. No, but I can't tell you. But I'm being as honest as I can. I can't say things that I don't remember. No, I have no reason to lie, but the truth is I don't remember. So if she's saying it right... Well, we have explained it already, right? What happened on the sofa, and that was it, because I don't remember more things. And as it happened, and it happened because, well, a moment when I don't know. The truth is I don't know what happened to me. I don't know. I don't know what happened to me there. That's the truth, but I don't remember those things. Talk, but in any way, if he says that Lolly and I had sex in any way, the one who had it was I, because I was the adult person. And I don't, well, I don't remember having penetrated her. It's not that I don't remember. I did not penetrate her. I remember it was on top, but not, but in between the legs. So I'm not sure, but it was, excuse me? No, I don't think so, but I'm in fact admitting, but there was no penetration. I admit to what he is telling me and what he says, but I didn't, there was no, well, there was no tearing, but what I am referring to is there was no penetration. Yes, I think so. No, it's that I'm not sure. Do I tell her that yes, it did happen, or you think so? No, well, it's not, no, I can't give a, I mean, I'm not sure, no, whether it penetrated, it did not penetrate, probably yes. Oh, well, the truth is I can't find the words, that's it. He could tell her to forgive me, to forgive me that I was an idiot and not knowing how to gauge the affection she has for me or used to have. It is that another thing that I do no longer remember, that's why, but I say again, that's one of the things I don't remember anymore about that. I don't remember because there I either forced her or she herself to, but I don't remember that time. Excuse me? I don't remember. I mean, it's not that I forgot. I don't remember that not, I mean, not that I don't remember. I don't remember that happening. I don't remember that part. No, but that's why I'm telling you I don't remember that part. No, I don't want him to tell her that, but well, I don't remember that part. How can I make myself clear? Or how do I also make him understand something that, or I don't remember. No, I don't remember, frankly. I'm talking to you frankly, and I fear God. I know who God is. That's why, but how does he want me to? I say it again, to tell him something I don't remember. Yes, but I feel pressured by things I don't remember. Maybe if I remember a little more, I would say it, but no, now I repeat what I said before about being in a fog due to the wine and that. As I'm telling you, I don't want to use it as a pretext. It isn't my absolution, my redemption either. The The fact is I was drinking. As I said before, even a drunk knows better than to shoot himself in the foot. There's no wine drinking drunk who will throw himself under a bus. But I don't remember those things. Yes, but I deny that. I reiterate, I deny that. I deny it. No, I am not beforehand. I tell you I deny it. But he is going to tell me I deny it. Or he also wants to tell me that's why. Excuse me? I didn't hear you. Yes. You were the one that said that to me the whole time. You brought that to my attention the whole time. Unintelligible. No. I have no idea. Maybe. That's what she said earlier. No, I don't remember. Then why don't you guys read your notes? You guys already read. You guys already asked me those questions. Read your notes, then you'll see the answer. Yes. That was just the same questions you asked me earlier prior to. Sigh. It was. Oh, yes. Maybe. Yes. I didn't take. I left it there in her house. I can't recall. Yeah, she offered me money. Yes, no, yes. I didn't deserve it or I did not earn that money. Yes, no. I have no idea. It's been a while. Small car, I guess. Not that I could recall. I can't, not that I can recall at this time. I don't remember. Yes. So you're saying to say yes? No. Yes. No. It just happened to be there. Possibly. Yes. No. Supposedly. No. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. It's the truth. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. No. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes. Yes, ma'am. I said I can't undo what I have done, and I sincerely regret and wished it had never happened. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Please do. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Well, I'm here now. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Not. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Not to my knowledge, no. No. Does my mother know? Well, you give me the chance to tell her personally that I might be gone for a very, very long time? Because of my wrongdoing, yes. Yes. Yes, sir. When do I go to court? Would I be defended? And the purpose of the recording and the, you know, jotting is for? With all the people I offended be there? Mr. Collette, no BS aside, personally, what do you think of me personally, as yourself, not your job, not your... Miss Christine, in all the cases you have seen, BS aside, what do you think of me personally? Meaning honest.
My friends, I'd like yes. to say that I love you, and I'm glad you've been.
What do you think of me personally besides that?
I'll miss you. Remember that today I'll be with Jesus in paradise. I'll see you again. Lord Jesus Christ.
During a visit to an orphanage yesterday, a little girl came over to me crying. Would you like to talk to me? I said. I guess so, she said.
Lord Jesus,
life isn't fair. When I was 4, me and Mommy went to the beach, and she parked the car in the space, and then we went out and got an ice cream. And then we waited until the light went red and the green man came on and we walked into the road. But the naughty man didn't stop, and Mommy threw me out of the way and she got hit.
Too many years I've
then she died and went to heaven.
Problems and heartache.
Oh, that's so wrong, I said.
I wanted to let you know that
there's
the Lord
no such
Jesus
thing
is
as
my
heaven.
Life and I just want to go. I'm going to fall asleep and I'll be in his presence shortly. I got reason to rejoice and I pray to see all of you there. I love you all. You had a good service and I'll be with you. I'll be waiting for you in heaven. Okay. Adios. That's all I have to say. I've come here today to die, not make speeches. Today is a good day for dying. Es solares oth mithas. My honor is my life. Keep it brief here. Just wanted to say, family, take care of yourselves. Look at this as a learning experience. Everything happens for a reason. We all know what really happened, but there are some things you just
merci
can't
pour,
fight.
Cette lecture,
little people
Vanessa.
Always seem to get squashed. It happens. Even so, just got to take the good with the bad. There is no man.
Aborder donc ce texte dont on vient d'entendre des extraits, ce sont des chroniques judiciaires où finalement et l'accusation et la défense et la littérature tentent de faire que à la fois les faits et le langage disent la vérité. Alors ma question est la suivante. On ne peut pas s'empêcher de penser quand on vous lit, de penser que vous êtes à la fois avocate et écrivain. Que peut l'écrivain que ne pourrait pas l'avocat? Que peut l'écrivain que ne pourrait pas l'avocate?
I would say that the writer can separate the power of the words from the power of the context of the words.
Je pense que ce que l'écrivain peut faire, que l'avocat ne peut pas faire, c'est séparer le pouvoir des mots du pouvoir du contexte dans lequel se trouvent ces mots.
And when that's done, what I believe shows is that the same language that all law is, just as all poetry is a kind of language. And whether or not you believe in that language or allow that language to affect you is the only difference.
Et en fait, ceci fait, ceci dit, je pense que ça montre que le langage de la poésie, comme le langage du droit, de la loi, chacun a son langage et tout dépend si oui ou non vous croyez à ce langage, enfin l'un ou l'autre.
Est-ce qu'on peut parler de poésie in situ? Je pensais à cette idée du contexte, justement.
I work a lot with appropriation, which means it's all found. It is poetry in situ. It's poetry that's gleaned.
Oui, c'est, je travaille au moyen de l'appropriation, c'est-à-dire c'est ce que je trouve. Hein. Ce sont des mots, la poésie que je glane, que je cueillis.
So sometimes it's a sound that I'll start to see where language starts to, there's a, it'll start to have its own echoes.
Parfois c'est, je pars d'un son, le moment où le, la langue commence à avoir ses propres échos.
Or a cadence that causes, like a liturgy, it causes you to start to believe something if it's said in a certain, with a certain rhythm.
Ou c'est une cadence, et cette cadence crée une espèce de liturgie qui crée à son tour une croyance à cause du rythme de cette liturgie.
On vous voyait d'ailleurs presque danser en lisant.
Yeah, you, when you read it, you're mm-hmm. almost dancing.
Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of the, yeah, I hear music and language. Sounds very romantic.
Oui, c'est vrai que j'entends, enfin, j'entends la musique de la langue, ce qui peut sembler très romantique.
Sauf que c'est un coup de poignard dans le romantisme, quand même.
That's a kind of romance, I guess.
Oui, mais ça en lui-même, c'est un genre de romantisme.
But one of the things that, if you, for example, with Beckett. One of the things about Beckett that I think is so compelling is that there's a rhythm to the language. And what's interesting to me that in both law and poetry there can be a rhythm. And if you start to breathe with the rhythm of the language, you can't separate yourself from it so easily.
Oui, ce qu'il y a avec Beckett, par exemple, c'est vrai que dans le, la langue de Beckett, il y a un vrai rythme qui... qui est totalement attirant, et je pense que avec la poésie c'est la même chose, il y a ce rythme et tout dépend si on se laisse aller avec ce rythme.
Sorry. No, no. But I think another thing that's important here is that one of the things poetry can do is to freeze that, whereas when I think we encounter bureaucratic language or language in newspapers, we don't look at it as an object.
Oui, ce que la poésie fait très bien, en fait, c'est de figer quelque chose. Et c'est vrai que la langue bureaucratique ou la langue de la presse, quand on lit, on n'arrive pas, il y a quelque chose qui fait qu'on n'arrive pas à saisir ça en tant, comme un objet.
Demain, nous allons organiser une table ronde consacrée à Charles Reznikov, et on recevra notamment Fiona McMahon, qui est l'auteur d'un essai qui s'intitule « Poétique du témoignage ». Et je voulais savoir si cette notion, ce concept qu'elle a engendré au sujet de Reznikov, « Poétique du témoignage », si cette poétique du témoignage avait un sens pour vous.
Yes, but in one way I think poetry actually works with a tradition of witness and testifying, whether it's to great battles or true love. So there's a way that poetry at its core has a tradition of the poet as witness.
Oui, je pense que traditionnellement la poésie quand même a ce lien en tant que témoin, que ce soit une grande bataille ou un grand amour. Je pense que au cœur de la poésie il y a ce rôle d'être témoin.
So what becomes interesting is not only to find the poetry in the witnessing, but to turn it so that the witness becomes the poet as well. a witness is using language to try to convince you of something and make you feel a certain way.
Oui, ce qui est intéressant, c'est pas seulement de essayer de trouver de la poésie dans ce témoignage, mais de retourner la chose pour que, en quelque sorte, le témoin se transforme, devient le poète.
Le poète témoin, le témoin poète. Justement, dans un petit ouvrage que vous avez coécrit avec Robert Fitterman, qui n'a pas été traduit encore, qui s'intitule « Notes sur les conceptualismes », vous engendrez ce concept qui est la fusion entre le sujet et l'objet. Le sujet égale l'objet, le poète est témoin, le témoin est poète, et vous parlez de, comment traduire ça en français, de subject.
En fait, en français, ça serait le
subject.
Subject, oui, le subject.
Subject.
A rape is a rape is a rape. Violet, un violet,
a rape is a rape is a rape. Yeah, I said for the first time in the history of literature, a rape was a rape was a rape.
Oui, mais pour la première fois dans la littérature, effectivement, un viol était un viol était un viol.
Which actually sounds like a violet is a violet is a violet. The idea of the subject would be, which I think is very legible, especially in an age of social media, is that there is no difference between, we are always not exactly a fusion of subject and object, but this entity that is both.
Oui, je pense que cette idée de subject, ce qui est très visible à notre époque où il y a les médias, enfin le Facebook, les networking sociaux, c'est qu'on n'est ni sujet ni objet, mais les deux en même temps.
So kind of sculpted, we sculpt ourselves for a certain regard, our own and others.
On se donne une forme, on se sculpte non seulement à partir des regards des autres, mais le regard qu'on a soi-même de soi.
Alors, en parlant de sculpture, justement, vous êtes l'auteur d'un geste sculptural immense. Puisque vous n'êtes rien de moins que la présidente directrice générale d'une société multinationale de poésie, la première au monde, qui s'intitule VanessaPlace.inc, VanessaPlace.inc. Où finalement on ne sait pas devant le langage de laquelle on ne sait pas comment faire face. Est-ce que c'est une refondation de la poésie en critiquant par une critique du monde des affaires? Des stratégies économiques, des codifications de type marketing, puisque poetry is a kind of money, c'est ce qui est affiché à l'entrée du site. Vous concevez des produits, bon, c'est encore des éditions limitées, mais est-ce que vous pourriez nous présenter ce projet et lui donner et nous parler de sa portée en fait?
Well, I'm still exploring some of it, but the idea was, in part, it was a response to people saying that poetry was the only art form that didn't have a market.
Oui, je suis toujours en train d'explorer, en fait, cette idée-là, mais c'était un tout petit peu une réponse à ce que les gens disaient, que la poésie était, de nos jours, la seule chose qui n'avait pas de marché.
And I think that's wrong, because not so much that poetry has a market like art has a market, where people buy so many books of poetry, but more that poetry is, on the one hand, a property that's used. Oftentimes a work of art will be described as poetic. So it's used to sort of elevate other commodities. And then also that... No, go ahead.
Oui, c'est peut-être pas l'idée d'un marché dans le sens des beaux-arts. On vend des peintures parce qu'on achète une peinture. Mais c'était plutôt l'idée... par exemple, on appelle... quand on dit, on parle d'une peinture, on dit souvent que c'est poétique, comme si c'était pour élever quelque chose dans l'œuvre. Et je pense que, je ne veux pas dire marché, mais dans le sens de, c'est quand même une property, how do you say that? Propriété, oui.
An element, qualité.
Oui, property in that sense, ok. Oui, c'est-à-dire, donc, on prend la poésie comme ayant une espèce de qualité, en fait. Oui, une qualité.
And so there was that aspect to it. Yeah, I just want to be able to get to other parts of the site. But then also this sort of performance, a performance of... One of the things that interests me is this idea of at this time in history of collaboration and both of the ways that collaboration means.
Et ce qui m'intéresse aussi, surtout à cette époque, c'est l'idée de collaborer, en fait, et dans les deux sens du mot collaborer, la collaboration.
And now we don't live in a time of society of the spectacle where we just receive, but we actually participate. And happily participate.
Et on ne vit plus dans la société du spectateur, du spectacle. Est venu le moment maintenant où on participe activement et même avec beaucoup de bonheur.
So one of the goals of Venice Place Inc. was to drag poetry into the art world, or the art world into poetry.
Donc un des objectifs de Venice Place Inc. c'était de traîner la poésie dans le monde de l'art, ou vice-versa, traîner le monde de l'art dans le monde de la poésie.
So, for example, this poetry pays, which is actually a pun in French, was a little bottle of dirt that had an ISBN number.
Oui, en fait, ce que vous voyez là, la poésie paye, qui est un jeu de mots en français. Ici, on a une petite fiole qui a un numéro ISBN. Mm-hmm. Oui.
Comme un livre.
Comme un livre, merci.
And a dollar bill hiding in the dirt.
Et bon, c'est rempli de saleté et il y a un billet d'un dollar qui se cache là-dedans.
And we sold these little vials of dirt for $136. And I was very happy because somebody bought one and donated it to the Poetry Foundation. I let them do it only if it was donated to the library, and the library had to accept it as a book of poetry.
So. Oui, c'était très drôle parce qu'en fait, on a vendu donc ces toutes petites bouteilles de saleté dedans. On les vendait $136 chacune. Et j'étais très contente parce que quelqu'un en a acheté un et il a fait une donation. Il en avait une donation. Who did he donate?
It was the Poetry Foundation of the United States.
The library. Oui, yeah. À la fondation des bibliothèques des États-Unis. Et en fait, ce qui était important, en fait, j'ai insisté que si la donation était réalisée, la bibliothèque était obligée d'accepter cette petite bouteille, mais en tant que livre.
So in the art world, this is not a big gesture, but in the poetry world, to have the poetry world accept an object that has no language exactly to it as a book. And as a book of poetry, was something.
Et ce geste, en fait, qui n'aurait pas fait un grand bruit dans le monde de l'art, dans le monde de la poésie, de faire en sorte que une bibliothèque accepte cet objet qui n'était absolument pas un livre, où la parole, enfin le texte écrit n'intervenait pas du tout, c'était quand même quelque chose.
And another stupid gesture that worked well, we sold a book of $21 bills for $50.
Et un autre geste qu'on a fait, une autre action, c'était de vendre un petit livre de billets de $20 que vous voyez là, qui est pour $50. Et ça a très bien marché. Yeah, because you put sold out.
Oui, we sold them out. Yeah.
Oui, on a mis vendu, tout est vendu. Plus de stock.
Vous avez même demandé à des poètes quel montant, quel coût leur âme était à mettre en jeu. Enfin, combien, j'arrive pas à le formuler, combien un poète valait. Et il devait s'auto-chiffrer, s'auto-évaluer.
I bought poet souls for a while. I offered, if you were a published poet, I would buy your soul.
Oui, j'ai acheté des âmes de poètes pendant un certain temps. C'est-à-dire que si vous étiez un poète publié, je demandais, mais combien vous me vendez votre âme?
So, because I thought a poet's soul would be worth more than a non-poet's soul, because that's what poets write with.
Et je pensais que l'âme d'un poète vaudrait beaucoup plus que l'âme d'un poète ou une autre personne, parce que c'est avec leur âme qu'écrivent les poètes.
But the interesting part about that project was I would invite people, they would agree, or they would start to agree, and I would say, tell me what price. And they would tell me their price, and then I would ask them, well, why? Why did you pick this price? And then we would have a discussion on email about why they thought, you know, one person, I think, wanted $1 per year of her life. And so I said, well, but what if you start to do very bad things as you get older? Does your soul still go up in value? And is your soul worth more than an innocent infant's soul?
Et dans ce projet, donc, au moment où je leur demandais combien vaut votre âme, je relançais, enfin, on me donnait un prix. Il y avait une dame, une femme qui me disait qu'elle voulait $1 chaque année pour le restant de sa vie. Mais on continue avec tout le monde, je continue la discussion pour dire, mais pourquoi vous évaluez votre âme à un tel prix, etc. Et avec cette femme, j'ai posé des questions, mais ok, d'accord, mais est-ce que la valeur de votre âme va augmenter avec le temps? Qu'est-ce qui va se passer si vous faites quelque chose de mauvais, quelque chose de mal? Est-ce que vous pensez que votre âme vaut plus que, par exemple, l'âme d'un enfant innocent? Enfin, je comparais les évaluations.
So we would have these, I would keep pushing the conversation to see how far they would go. And it became very interesting because a number of people who thought they didn't believe that they had a soul, which was why they would sell it, started to take it back.
Et c'était très intéressant parce que je poussais cette discussion par email d'ailleurs, cette discussion de plus en plus loin. Et un point intéressant, c'est que même ceux qui ne croyaient pas avoir une âme réellement ont commencé un tout petit peu de changer de position dans la mesure où ils ont commencé à vouloir récupérer leur âme, la reprendre, oui, dans laquelle ils ne croyaient pas, a priori.
But my favorite, I have to say, my favorite was a man who wanted $100,000 for his soul. But by the time we finished our correspondence, he gave me $8 to take it off his hands.
L'échange préféré, c'était avec un homme qui au départ voulait $100,000 pour son âme, mais ça a continué. Au bout du compte, quand on a clôturé la discussion, c'est lui en fait qui m'a donné $8.
But I still have them.
Et je les ai encore, ces vidéos-là.
Vous avez un autre projet dans le cadre de cette multinationale à nous présenter ?
Well, I'm still working a bit with Vanessa Place Inc. and seeing what else will come of it. One of the ideas that we have been playing with is we bought ISBN numbers, and to open it up so that we would sell them for people to turn objects into books, and to see how far people could go with this idea of what could be a book. Now, especially that books are sculptural.
Oui, on joue avec pas mal d'idées. Il y en a une où on pensait acheter un lot de numéros ISBN pour les revendre ensuite.
Were you going to sell them or give them to people? I'll sell them.
Oui, les vendre, tout simplement pour voir quels seraient les objets qu'il transformerait en livre au moyen de ce numéro.
And also, I was working a bit with avatars, so I would give readings, and I would give someone a little certificate, and they would appear at the reading with the certificate of authenticity, saying that they were me, and then they would have to be introduced with my bio and do the performance. So.
Oui, je travaillais aussi avec les avatars où je faisais des lectures, mais parmi les gens, le public, je donnerais à certaines personnes un petit certificat d'authenticité, enfin qui confirmait l'authenticité du fait qu'ils étaient moi. Donc, ils devaient. Were you asking about their bio?
No, I just, for purposes of the reading, they had to be me, so they had to be introduced with my bio, they had to read my work.
Ah, ok, donc c'est ces personnes-là qui faisaient la lecture, et la règle du jeu, c'était, puisqu'ils avaient ce certificat prouvant qu'ils étaient moi, ils devaient se présenter et lire mes œuvres à moi, se présenter comme s'ils étaient moi.
And then I was sort of playing with this idea of, you know, there's a concrete poetry, and I was thinking about contract poetry or the poetic contract. And so there was this idea of, well, I could write a contract and some other woman could show up and that would be fine because we have a contract that she's me. I also, along the same lines with the contract, sublet. I sublet my reading to another poet, so she paid me to take my, I gave her my space.
Oui, il y avait deux autres idées aussi, la poésie contractuelle en fait, où par exemple j'aurais un contrat à lire ou faire quelque chose quelque part, mais il y aurait une autre personne qui prendrait ma place, parce qu'effectivement il y avait un contrat entre nous, qu'elle était moi. Et elle me remplacerait. Et ou bien même la sous-location de mes œuvres.
It was your work that you were subletting? No, she got to do her own work because it was a sublet.
Okay. Oui, c'est-à-dire, oui. Donc en fait, pour les lectures, je sous-traitais, oui, comme avec un appartement en fait. C'est la personne qui allait lire à ma place ses propres œuvres, et elle me payait pour ça.
And a lot of these things are stupid, but the idea is this: trying to highlight the relationship between cultural capital, social capital, and language.
Oui, beaucoup de ces idées sont stupides, mais c'était vraiment pour mettre en lumière le rapport entre les capitales culturelles, les capitales sociales. Et la langue et l'argent.
Simplement, je fais en français. Simplement, la question, c'est d'essayer de comprendre dans quelle mesure les gestes que propose Vanessa Place ont une inscription spécifique dans la question de la littérature. dans la mesure où ils sont quand même des gestes très significativement identifiables dans l'histoire de l'art conceptuel. Et qu'à la rigueur, ce qui s'applique à des livres ou à d'autres choses, pour moi, ne me semble pas si signifiant que ça. Ce sont des gestes qui sont très marqués dans l'histoire de l'art, quand même. Alors, est-ce que l'histoire de la littérature et de la poésie serait une histoire autonome de l'histoire de l'art? Est-ce que elle le supposait tout à l'heure, je voudrais qu'elle aille un peu plus loin à cet endroit-là, d'une idée d'autonomie de l'histoire de la poésie par rapport à l'histoire de l'art.
Yeah, the autonomy.
And the difference is that in conceptual art could get rid of the object because it had the language.
Oui, la différence c'est que l'art conceptuel pouvait se dispenser de l'objet parce qu'il restait la langue. Il avait la langue.
The object in poetry is the language.
L'objet de la poésie c'est évidemment la langue elle-même.
So what happens if you hollow out the language itself?
Qu'est-ce qui se passe si on creuse et on vide cet objet de la langue elle-même?
So in many ways these gestures, on the one hand, they're bringing into the poetry world art gestures.
Donc d'un côté, qu'est-ce que ces gestes, ces actions font? Elles introduisent dans le monde de la poésie l'art.
On the other hand, I think there's a more fundamental violence because there's no language left.
Mais je pense que la violence est quand même beaucoup plus fondamentale parce qu'il ne reste plus de langue.
Et dans le cas, dans les cas précis que vous citez, il reste quand même cette langue et le principe conceptuel que la chose existe par son récit. Aujourd'hui, on vous écoute raconter quelque chose. Et donc, est-ce que cette opération de raconter quelque chose continue à être dans le travail, ou là, on est dans la question de du document et de l'œuvre? Parce que là, aujourd'hui, on a accès, en tout cas, aux formes par leur récit, et du coup, la langue revient dans le travail.
Olivier.
I can't do it in English, I think.
Could you just repeat what you said in English?
Yeah. Now the point is that just today you are telling all the stories about the thing you have done, and so those things come to us as something you tell. So something of the language is coming back, and I'm wondering if you consider that in that specific case, when at that moment you are telling the stories, are the stories inside the process, or is only a document about the process? La question, voilà, c'était la question de savoir ce qu'on vit aujourd'hui, si quelque part qu'il y a du langage, quelle est sa place dans, en tout cas, le processus de Vanessa Place Inc.
It's all part of it. It's all part of the performance of it. Even the criticism that I do, I consider performative criticism. So there's a way in which what I am always not doing is clarifying.
Oui, en fait, ça fait partie d'un ensemble. Tout rentre dedans. Tout est performance. Ma critique est performative. I'm sorry, I got the last thing you said.
It's all part of a performance of a kind of linguistic emptiness.
Oui, ça fait partie d'une espèce de vide linguistique.
Je voulais qu'on se penche maintenant sur l'environnement dans lequel nous baignons ce soir. C'est une installation sonore qui s'intitule Last Words, Dernier mot. C'est une installation qui a été présentée, je le disais tout à l'heure, au Max Center, à la Schindler House, qui est une maison d'architectes conçue par Schindler à Los Angeles, et qui est un lieu de jonction entre art et architecture, et aussi littérature. Et Vanessa a donc présenté cette installation sonore. Et la particularité de ce que l'on entend, c'est une lecture de l'intégralité des derniers mots, des dernières déclarations de détenus de condamné à mort de l'État du Texas, puisque il y a un an environ, le département de la justice de l'État du Texas a mis en ligne en fait les dernières déclarations des condamnés à mort. C'est-à-dire qu'avant de passer à la trappe, si j'ose dire, le condamné est amené à prononcer une dernière sentence, un dernier mot. Et ils ont relevé en fait la somme de toutes ces déclarations et les ont mises en ligne. Et donc Vanessa a conduit une installation où elle lit les 510, je crois, déclarations. Évidemment, on peut refuser de dire quelque chose et dans ce cas-là, on entend 5 secondes de silence. Voilà, donc je voulais poser la question de comment ce document, qui a la particularité malheureusement d'être extensible de mois en mois, puisque la peine de mort n'est toujours pas remise en cause au Texas. C'est un triste work in progress.
I go in about every 6 months and record the new ones.
Oui, effectivement, tous les 6 mois, je reprends toutes les nouvelles déclarations qui ont été faites.
Please Lord, I don't want to be in heaven. I mean, I don't
want to be in hell. Qu'est-ce qui vous a frappé dans le, en traversant, plus qu'en les traversant, en les lisant aussi, en ces différentes déclarations, il y a souvent un appel à la religion, un appel à Dieu, à la famille. Il y a des gens qui déclarent leur innocence.
I truly forgive all of y'all in Jesus Christ. We pray.
There's definitely genres of last words, like prayers, and as you said, the things to the family, and saying you're innocent. But what I found most fascinating was,
I'll
try to say this simply, but it's a purely Kantian moment.
Ce que vous dites, effectivement, c'est vrai, il y a un genre de dernières paroles, des genres de ces dernières paroles, comme vous mentionnez, la religion, la famille, etc. Mais c'est vrai, je vais essayer de dire ça simplement, c'est une espèce de moment kantien.
It's at this moment, right before death, that the individual actually throws himself into being a subject. A pure subject.
C'est le moment juste avant de mourir qu'une personne se jette, mais entièrement, complètement, dans l'état de sujet, mais où il devient rien qu'un sujet.
And in this sort of moment of where he becomes, and it's almost always a he, a transcendent subject, of course the only way to do that is then you die. And so the very thing that makes him a subject also completely will render him an object. And you can hear that with a lot of them. They start administering the drugs as they're talking.
Oui, et souvent,
I love you, Annie. You have been the best friend
I've
ever had.
Ce qui est frappant, c'est que ce moment donc où l'homme, parce que c'est normalement ce sont des personnes masculines, devient sujet, mais au moment où cet état-là leur est enlevé, si j'ai bien compris. C'est-à-dire, c'est au moment où ils deviennent pleinement leur propre sujet que la mort intervient et en fait ils redeviennent objet à ce moment-là. Et très souvent, on remarque que c'est pendant ces dernières paroles, avant que cette personne ait fini de parler,
Anthony Graves had nothing to do with it. I lied on him in court.
La dose mortelle.
My wife had nothing to do with it.
What's also interesting is that so many of these statements, though there are these moments, there's these pure philosophic moments, are very banal, very banal and very boring.
Oui, et ce qui est aussi frappant, c'est beaucoup de ces déclarations, au fond, sont très ennuyeuses et très banales.
Mais elles revêtent un poids particulier. On s'émerveille toujours des premiers mots d'un enfant. Là, ce sont les derniers mots d'un homme qui se sait condamné.
So I hope you all find you all peace, comfort, and strength in Christ Jesus alone, because that's where it's
at. En principe, on ne connaît pas ces derniers mots soi-même. On ne sait pas.
Derrida, in his last seminar, I'm ready to go home and be with my Lord. His last few seminars were actually on the death penalty. And one of the things he said primarily is to just think about that moment for a moment. And all those to think about if somebody said to you, you have one thing to say office. Before
you
die.
That's why Michael Sputnik got fired and ran off.
Je pense que c'est Derrida, au cours de ses derniers séminaires, qui a dit, effectivement, il parlait sur la peine capitale. Il disait, effectivement, ce qui est important, c'est de penser à ce dernier moment, que pour un moment.
There's more than 30 altered and falsified records saying well, I told so-and-so this or that. But you go look in their
records. It's a complicated project because to think about what one would say right before one dies, knowing that this is the last thing you'd ever say.
He's the big hero.
That's one aspect.
Oui, ça c'est très compliqué comme situation de penser à ce qu'on aurait envie de dire au dernier moment, sachant que c'est un dernier moment, c'est quand même difficile à mener.
The second aspect is that you're being forced to speak by the state.
Le deuxième aspect, c'est que en fait, l'État vous oblige de parler.
And even if you refuse to speak, it's seen as a refusal.
Et même si on refuse, on s'y refuse. C'est quand même un refus qui est aussi, peut être vu comme une énonciation.
I met when I first drove up here. Lester Byers, Chris Black, Alba, John Alba.
Je pense qu'on va s'arrêter là.
Est-ce que
mais j'avais quand même une dernière question. Je voulais savoir si on était en présence de l'avatar de Vanessa Place ou si c'était vraiment Vanessa Place.
It's going to be all right. That's it. It's time to roll up out of here.
It's always an avatar.
Let's get it over with.
It's always an avatar.
Oui, en fait, c'est toujours un avatar.
I have a written statement for the press, so it will be released as soon as they can. And I also responded to a comment to me from Sandy, daughter of Ms. Ferris. I have felt deeply sorry for the deceased, but I'm sorry that I wasn't the one that did it or anything. She will tell you that when she gets a chance to, when the time comes. I just wish just to be patient when the time for each and every one of y'all individually have y'all time. But I'm not putting pressure on either one of y'all being having any guilt. I just want to say two things. Executing someone that is innocent, because even though I am, the burden will be wiped away and you will be at ease to know that I know how it is and they will pay for it when their time comes. And all I have to say is that right now I'm sorry that it happened. And I was not part in it, but part responsible for not properly getting the word out in time to get the right victim or the right convict or the right person that did it. I just wish to say a little prayer for the family for their appearance and forgiveness in this matter. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day your daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. Our Lord, amen. And don't be surprised if your mom be the helper of God that would grab my hand and say, you are now into eternal life with God. This is her being one of the chosen ones to give as proof of innocence. That's what I mean by telling you I don't mean to injure you anymore. When your time comes, that she would let you know if I was innocent or guilty. That about all I have to say. Love you all.